This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before we get started, I need to address the elephant in the room. So, after several months of wearing my Star Trek uniform t-shirt, I got quite a few comments. Some people were rather triggered by this. They said that it was cringe and unprofessional, and ultimately I have to agree that the pips were not in the right place, and it was just a t-shirt, and so in response I have upgraded to a handmade costume-grade, Sovereign-class uniform. I hope that this resolves all the complaints about my last cringe outfit. Now, moving on to today's topic, the United States Senate recently had a closed-door session with more than 20 CEOs and researchers and other stakeholders about artificial intelligence. So the full list of this this closed-door Senate session includes all kinds of people, and I picked out a few people that I was particularly interested in having seen them. Now, Dr. Rumen Chowdhury is someone that I follow on LinkedIn, and she advocates for, amongst many other things, red teaming, particularly by third-party agencies. So she's very articulate, very intelligent, and I appreciate the way that she approaches AI safety. Another one is Tristan Harris, who is the CEO of the Center for Humane Technology, so he focuses on alignment with humanity. One of the ones that was most interesting was Alex Karp. So Alex Karp is the CEO of Palantir. And if you're not familiar with Palantir, they are basically for law enforcement and intelligence agencies. They're a like big data gathering agency, and they focus on graph theory, actually. And so most of what they do is scrape public and some private data sources to correlate times, events, transactions, and all kinds of other things. They have quite a few products and projects out there. But the fact that someone who is involved with law enforcement, counterterrorism, and military intelligence was involved in this was really interesting. And so back when I first heard about Palantir, I listened to a few interviews with Alex Karp, and he has very, very specific and very clear beliefs about the way that the world works. And in particular, you know, he explicitly refuses to sell his services to totalitarian regimes like China, North Korea, and Russia, because he says that their goals and their ambitions are intrinsically destructive and run directly counter to the Western way of life, the American way of life, and the European way of life. So very principled person, and I know not everyone's going to agree with him, and I certainly don't agree with him on every point, but this is a highly principled person who has a global perspective, and that's actually why he created his company. Another one was Deborah Raji, who focuses on algorithmic bias and accountability. Janet Merguia, I hope I'm saying her name right, civil rights activist. Interestingly, there's a few creatives. So Charles Rivkin and Meredith Stein were representing the film industry and the writing industry. So probably they were invited in order to represent the interests of people that are affected by generative AI art. We had Elizabeth Schuler for labor rights. We had teachers represented, and then finally a second person representing human and civil rights. So I know that there's been a lot of people that criticize this meeting for being too many CEOs, but some of those CEOs are CEOs of nonprofits and research and advocacy organizations. So look past the headlines and recognize that there are a lot of heavy hitters here. Okay. So here's one image of the event. So you get a little bit of context. You can see the format. I think that's Elon Musk right there. And then there's Alex Karp. I think there's Sundar Pichai of Google and a few others. So I think there's Chuck Schumer there. There's Dr. Ruman Chaudhary. So you can see that it's like this, almost like this kind of crescent table. And I guess these are the observers. I'm not sure. Maybe other senators that were watching. Anyways, so definitely a lot of pomp and circumstance, but there's also kind of this sense of equality or egalitarian people being side by side. I believe this is the CEO of Microsoft. Sorry, the resolution of this picture is a little bit too low. Okay, so super high-level overview. This was a six-hour session. I was kind of surprised by that, so they probably had a break for lunch, but that's a long time to be sitting and talking. It was hosted by Senator Chuck Schumer, which, if you're not familiar with what he's done with AI recently, he just a couple months ago proposed the Safe Innovation Framework, which is a four-point AI safety innovation framework, which tries to balance safety and innovation. I did read it, at least the initial kind of press release, as well as some of the initial literature that came out about it, and it seemed okay. But it's not very specific. But again, that's why they're having these meetings. Now, this was a closed-door meeting in order to reduce press visibility and also to facilitate candid conversations. And I'll get into that in just a moment, because this part, the fact that it was closed-door, caused a lot of heartburn. And even, I will admit that even when I first heard about that, I was like, wow, really? Like, they're going closed-door sessions already with all these industry insiders. But I wanted to wait and see what information came out and then give my honest appraisal after having some time to reflect on it and seeing kind of what trickled out of this meeting.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So one thing that I want to point out is that the Senate, the United States Senate, has already had many public hearings around everything from AI and copyright, AI safety, regulation, and all sorts of stuff. And so it is time for them to move on to having closed door meetings in order to have those more candid conversations. So basically the idea is you reduce the risk profile for CEOs speaking candidly, because what you'll see what happens when they speak publicly is that they have to have highly, highly sanitized corporate speak in order to say, like, you know, basically give canned responses to things. However, if you have a little bit more privacy, that gives them permission to say things that may not sit well with the public. And of course, I can hear some people saying, well, if they're going to say stuff that doesn't sit well with the public, maybe it should be public. Maybe these people with all this money and privilege and power and influence should not have these closed door privileges. However, there is a reason for this format. And I'm not going to say that this is the correct format. I'm just saying the reasons, there are reasons for this format. And basically it comes down to the neoliberal approach to government and economics versus the communist totalitarian Soviet version, which the key difference here is central management versus free market capitalism and third party experts. So basically the idea, the two underpinning principles of neoliberalism here are free market advocacy and minimal state intervention. And so one of the downstream effects of this is that rather than having only the government making decisions. The government is supposed to consult with outside experts. This is something that America does very differently from the way that, you know, the Soviet communists used to do things. And this is, of course, still the way that China does things today, where the government makes all decisions more or less unilaterally. By consulting with industry experts who have different agendas and different stakes and things, the idea is that you'll have better decision-making processes over time, that you'll get information from different stakeholders with different agendas and different motivations, and that everything will kind of get pulled towards some semblance of the truth, or maybe not truth, maybe that's the wrong word, but that things will get kind of pulled towards the center. Okay, so the whole thing, the comment that kicked off all of this research on my part was Dr. Chowdhury's comment on LinkedIn. As I mentioned, I follow her on LinkedIn. I am one step away from connecting with her, but I follow her and plenty of other policy advocates around the world, not just in America. But so I'll skip the first part, but the meat of this was, in seriousness, I was impressed with the quality and candor of conversation. The panelists and senators were engaged in direct and real conversation about the realistic harms of AI and what government can do. I advocated for increased funding and access for independent researchers and investment in a full ecosystem of governance, not just industry and government, but independent third parties. We talked about open source, education, access, sustainable innovation, guardrails, benchmarks, and more. It's a positive step forward. So I literally just copied this directly from her LinkedIn. This is not me editorializing. This is one for one copy from her LinkedIn. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find her saying anything else. So this is probably a statement that her PR team helped her craft in order to just say, like, hey, this was a positive thing moving forward. I don't know that she said anything else publicly about it, but fortunately, plenty of other people have commented, and I have injected some of that information from that. So here's another angle. So we have Chuck Schumer, there we have Dr. Chowdhury here, and a few other people that I don't recognize. That's definitely the CEO of Microsoft. There's CEO of Google.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
So they separated some people out so that they weren't necessarily side by side, although there was one pairing that makes me a little nervous, which we'll get to at the end. Okay, so after sifting through all of the bits of information that are trickling out from various sources, I found that there's basically only three points of agreement that really came out of this this event. So first, there was unanimous agreement that the government needs to participate in regulation and development of AI. Basically, my understanding is what happened is near the beginning of the thing, Senator Chuck Schumer just asked, like, by a show of hands, who agrees that the government should intervene? And so everyone raised their hands. And there's a reason that I wanted to include this, as well as the earlier slide about neoliberalism, which one of the principles of neoliberalism is government non-intervention. And so that leads to the unsubstantiated quotation earlier, which is that the government seems like they're ready to rip up the existing playbook and move towards a different paradigm of direct government oversight, regulation, and development of AI, which is a very powerful pivot away from the minimalist approach of neoliberalism, which basically creates a Wild West environment of corporatism. So hopefully what this is signaling is actually a fundamental paradigm shift in the way that the government is going to approach things. And basically what I'm hoping is that the government will start to advocate more zealously on the interests of people, not just consumers, but all citizens, all civilians. This is me reading the tea leaves. I don't know if that's actually how it's going to play out, and we'll unpack this in a little bit more depth in the coming slides. Another thing that was agreed on was that international coordination is required. So remember, this is layer 6 of the Gatto framework that I proposed, which is that we need international bodies not necessarily regulators or researchers. They just said international coordination. They likened it to nuclear regulators like the IAEA. There was general consensus about international regulation. There was not as much consensus about creating an international research body like CERN. And personally, what I would really like to see is all the foundation, maybe not all, but many of the foundation and frontier models being trained by public funding, by tax dollars and international efforts, and then being accessible to everyone, all companies, all people. Maybe open source, maybe not open source. I'm still undecided. I very lean heavily towards open source because it's like Python is open source. Like eventually, here's the way I see it. Eventually, we're going to look at AI as just like any other programming language or operating system or computer program. It's just another tool in the toolbox. So I am very much in favor of open sourcing for all AI because that's going to make it more transparent, more explainable, and over the long run, more secure. But more importantly, on principle, open source AI is going to enable for more democratic access, which actually Mark Zuckerberg advocates for pretty vociferously. And he seems like he's alone in this in terms of advocating for just like 100% open source. And then finally, the third point that everyone seemed to agree on was public funding and development of expertise around AI. So basically, there seems to be general agreement that they need to increase government investment, not just in terms of university grants and other things like that, but in terms of workforce development. Now, there was a lot of disagreement. So one of the most contentious points of disagreement was the role of open source. So as I just mentioned, Mark Zuckerberg seems like he was more or less alone out there in just saying that like open source will democratize access. I fully agree. But then, of course, Meta and Mark Zuckerberg don't have the best access when it comes to civil rights and being responsible users of artificial intelligence. So what's their angle? We'll unpack that in just a moment. Tristan Harris from the Center for Humane Technology, he basically said Meta unilaterally decided what was safe and that was not cool because he and his team found that Llama could be used to produce harm. But then again, like you can use Python to do harm, but no one's requiring, you know, Python to be licensed, you know, or check with regulators every time.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Bill Gates also pushed back against Mark Zuckerberg, saying that there's a really big difference between just searching for information that is passively available online and interacting with an AI system. What I'm reading into this is based on Bill Gates' comments when he was first shown GPT-4. He released a statement through his online platform talking about how he perceives software agents, AI agents, as being transformative to the workforce. So I think that Bill Gates is thinking in terms of autonomous AI moving forward. And so obviously if some people are starting to arm up with either commercial or weaponized autonomous AI, that's a really big concern because just searching for information on the internet is a far cry from being able to build something that is fully autonomous and agentic. Again, I'm reading into that a little bit. That is my personal editorializing. So I want to be very clear that I don't have any evidence that Bill Gates is thinking about weaponized AI, but just based on his track record of what he has said, because he was one of the first people that Sam Altman and OpenAI showed, demonstrated the capabilities of GPT-4 to. So he is in a privileged position to better understand what these tools are capable of and what the risks are. Also, he's a prolific reader. He reads like 1 to 2 books a day. So he's a pretty sharp dude. And I know that, like, as one of the world's richest people, he is under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of people don't like him. That's fine. It is really suspicious that he's buying a lot of farmland and a lot of forests. But you know what? If I were a billionaire, I'd probably be buying real estate too. So I can't really blame him for that. And then finally, Sam Altman seemed to, interestingly, Sam Altman seemed to kind of softened his tone from previous meetings, because he said some things are okay to be open source, but there are probably some things that you don't want to be fully public. Why I say he softened his tone is because at the previous Senate hearings, my interpretation was that he was pretty vociferously advocating that, like, pretty much anything that is above a certain threshold of power should be licensed. I don't agree with that, because again, you fight fire with fire, right? If you want only the most wealthy companies to have frontier models and that they can be closed sourced and licensed, what about the regulators? What about the cybersecurity firms? What about the people who cannot afford those and have to just trust that a closed source tech company is providing them the best tools? No, I don't agree with that, because I'm looking at this from a cybersecurity perspective, where you better well have all the best cybersecurity firms have access to the most powerful frontier models and can tear them apart, which they would be able to do with open source models in order to find those vulnerabilities. Now, that being said, I think that probably a compromise is what Dr. Chowdhury and others have advocated for, which is giving privileged access to researchers. But again, that's keeping it all behind closed doors, which I'm not necessarily in favor of. Like, if we want a free market, we should have a free market. If we believe in free market capitalism, we need to have a free market, including the intellectual aspect. And another thing that I like to point out to people is that all of these frontier models are almost entirely based on open source papers that are provided by universities and funded by public dollars. That's not to say that they don't produce some of their own internal research, in particular Meta. They have a very robust research wing. NVIDIA also has a very robust research wing. But even still, many of the innovations are publicly funded innovations. Okay, so that's my spiel there. Another point of disagreement was they really can't agree on whether they're just going to appropriate existing regulatory bodies or create a brand new one. I believe that Elon Musk was one of the ones who was advocating for creating entirely new regulatory bodies. And the analogy that he used repeatedly was talking about automobile safety. When car safety became a big thing, there was not an existing body. And now we have several regulatory bodies specifically for transportation safety in America. It was NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, as well as a few other safety regulators that look at the automotive manufacturing industry, road laws, that sort of things.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
And then finally, there was also no agreement on the impact that AI is going to have on the workforce. Do you just train up? Do you skill up? Are there going to be job losses or not? The tech execs, interestingly, seemed to close ranks and say, we're not really worried. This is going to be great for productivity. We're going to turn the economy up to 11. But everyone else was not so sure about that narrative, which I'm really glad. And having watched a lot of interviews with various stakeholders, not necessarily some of the people at this meeting, but other stakeholders and influencers like Andrew Ng and others, there is general consensus amongst many people, including many entrepreneurs, that AI is just going to basically trash all conventional understanding of jobs and economics as we know it. And I call this post-labor economics. Okay, so that's kind of what has fallen out of this. So let's unpack this a little bit further. The biggest thing that I and other people are worried about is regulatory capture. So regulatory capture is when a regulatory body ends up being so heavily influenced by the industry that it is regulating that it becomes completely ineffective and totally corrupt. And so this image comes from the infamous Big Tobacco Senate hearings back in, I think, 1994, where with a straight face, these CEOs said that tobacco is not addictive. And it's just like, okay, that lost all credibility. And so probably, even though this is almost 30 years old now, I remember this, even though I was a little kid, because of how angry people were. They're like, this is absolute nonsense. And my mom was a smoker at the time, and she even said, this is nonsense. She's like, this is absolute baloney. This is total BS. So there's a few other aspects of regulatory capture, such as closed door meetings. Closed door meetings are actually one of the ways that industries that are being regulated can end up getting undue influence. And so this is why those public hearings were much more popular. But one thing that a lot of people didn't realize is that a lot of the senators before those public hearings had private dinners with many of the stakeholders and other people beforehand. So the backdoor meetings are always happening. And again, it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. So I don't really know what the best way is. Honestly, I would prefer if everything was public. But the thing is the American public, as all proletariat and unwashed masses, many people tend to react very poorly to the halls of power saying anything. So I understand the need for closed door meetings and expert conferences. But again, in an ideal world, and we don't live in an ideal world, everything would be public and, you know, everyone would get along and digest the information like mature adults. But not everyone is a mature adult. So unfortunately, I understand the need for closed door meetings. And finally, the devil is in the details. I'm not going to read all this to you, but the summary of another source basically said, overall, the meeting showed agreement on the need to regulate AI given its transformative potential, but details remain to be worked out through industry and expert input. So basically, there's no agreement on licensing. I tried to find if there was any specific talk about licensing. And again, there seemed to be no consensus amongst any particular group about licensing. But one thing that the senators were most concerned about was, you know, watermarking AI or licensing AI that can be used for election interference. So again, you know, tech exec CEOs, big tech CEOs, they have one set of concerns. People that are advocating for teachers and civil rights and human rights, they have another set of concerns. The senators themselves, they want to get reelected. They don't want to get blamed if, you know, any more lunatics take over the asylum, so to speak. So this is kind of one of the key takeaways, is that they have not yet worked out details. But at least we have surfaced through these conversations the differences, the agreements and disagreements about what details remain to be hashed out. And so I believe this is my last slide. What I want to point out is that even within the tech industry, there are different business models which can underpin some of the different behaviors that we see from these people. And this actually came from some very helpful comments in my YouTube section as I posted various news articles and stuff. So thanks everyone for participating. I read pretty much all comments. And I react, I try and respond to the, good ones and, the most thoughtful ones. But so what I want to point out is that Microsoft is fundamentally a business software company and a cloud company. Yeah, they have Xbox and a few other services, but they're business software. AI is just a tool that they offer, and Azure provides both open source and closed source AI models. Microsoft is hedging their bets. They're not going all in on open source or closed source. They're like, you know what? If you want to use a model, we'll provide it to you through Azure. Great. Have fun. Go nuts. NVIDIA, likewise, they're a hardware and they're working on some cloud platforms. But again, they don't care about the underlying models. Closed source, open source, whatever. It's running on their GPUs. That's all they care about. Meta. So this was one of the key insights that came from my audience. Meta, they are fundamentally a social media company, and of course they're working on VR. They're not trying to sell AI directly. They just want AI to enable their products to be better in order to, you know, have basically realize the Ready Player One Oasis universe, which I want to point out that Ready Player One was a cautionary tale about what not to do. So maybe Meta, maybe Mark Zuckerberg misread the room when that movie came out. But anyways, whatever. I do agree, even if he's got potentially dubious motives, I do agree with him advocating for like just fully open source AI. I'm glad that someone is in the room advocating for that, and that it's coming out in this dialogue. Now, OpenAI, if you've watched my channel for a long time, you know that I have a love-hate relationship with OpenAI, because on the one hand, they've done some really cool things, and where they started was very much in line with my personal values. Where they have gone, they've seemed to have drifted, and as Elon Musk pointed out, when OpenAI started, it was both open source and nonprofit, and neither of those things are true anymore. So it's definitely misnamed. They're a one-trick pony, though. They literally have one product, GPT-3 and now GPT-4. Everything that they do is predicated on the success of a single model. And so, of course, they're the most vocal about licensing. This is why Ilya Sutskever and Jan Lakey and Sam Altman are constantly talking about licensing. Why? Because they're trying to pull up the ladder behind themselves. They want to protect on and wall off their ability to make money. Now, I know that Sam Altman is constantly talking about, like, he's like, oh, well, I have no financial incentive to do this. Yes, he's got plenty of money already, but he's got plenty of social incentive to do this. Sam Altman is at the most powerful he's ever been, and all humans, particularly in that space, want more power. There's a book called The Status Game that a friend of mine and a good mentor recommended that I read. I haven't fully read it yet, but basically The Status Game says that one of the primary motivations of humans, once everything else is taken care of, is to achieve more status, whether that's scientific standing, social standing, commercial standing, or whatever. People want more fame, more power. And so whenever Sam Altman says that he has no personal stake in this, I don't really believe it. Now, that being said, he does say some things that I agree with. He does some things I disagree with. He's a complicated person like everyone else. Look at me making YouTube videos wearing a Star Trek outfit. We're all flawed, wonderful creatures. IBM, likewise, is a ancient software, business software and hardware company. They actually, I don't know if you know this, but IBM actually started with mechanical time clocks. That was one of their first products, and it was literally over 100 years ago. They have obviously evolved since then. They are now doing artificial intelligence with Watson X, and they're also doing quantum computing. So they are pivoting to next-gen stuff. Again, AI, it's part of what they research, but it's only a component of their broader portfolio of products and services. Google, again, Google and Microsoft and OpenAI, they're all kind of in slightly different places. Google is still the preeminent search engine pretty much on the entire planet. They're somewhat vulnerable, but particularly if you watched AI Explained, it looks like Gemini is coming down the pipeline, and it looks like Gemini is going to blow the roof off of everything. Hopefully, it remains to be seen. But considering that Google literally started everything with embeddings and vectors and transformers, I have a sneaking suspicion that Google, once they set their mind to dominating AI, they're going to get really good at it really fast. So I'm personally not worried about Google. And even the CEO of Google has hinted at the fact that he's not worried about OpenAI's capabilities. Also, Google has way more engineers than OpenAI. And they hire some smart people. I've talked to some people at Google. Many of them are some of the most friendly and people that I've ever met, but also, damn, are they smart. Holy mackerel, the people at Google are really smart. Same with NVIDIA. NVIDIA hires the best algorithm people on the planet. So they set their mind to something, they'll figure it out. SpaceX, Tesla, and X, all under Elon Musk. Again, Elon Musk is afraid of AI, but that's not his primary business model. He's focusing on space and rockets and cars and social media since he bought Twitter, which is a hot flaming mess right now. But AI is just a component of all of these things. He's more concerned about, you know, long-termism and the future of humanity. I don't necessarily agree with that philosophy, but it's a philosophy, and it's a morally consistent philosophy. And then finally, Palantir. They're fundamentally a law enforcement and intelligence agency. And again, AI is just a tool for them. So the point here is pay attention to the intrinsic motivations of all of these companies and the threats and opportunities that AI regulation presents to them in order to know how to read the tea leaves when talking about regulatory capture. So again, I am vehemently opposed to requiring licensing. I am like fully on board with open source because, like, here's the thing. Nobody's trying to regulate Linux. Right, but Linux is a powerful operating system with a comprehensive ecosystem of software that can be used for hacking and can be used for biohacking and can be used for all sorts of illegitimate means, but nobody cares. Why? because it is out there in a comprehensive cybersecurity ecosystem. And the cybersecurity ecosystem is how you get safety, not government regulation. I'm sorry. Okay. This is the cringeworthy picture that I mentioned at the beginning. This is what really kind of gives me bad vibes, because this is Alex Karp of the intelligence company Palantir and Elon Musk. And again, I don't necessarily have anything personal against either of these guys. Like I said, they're complicated humans. They have very strong moral convictions and future-oriented goals about the world. But it's like, why would you put them side by side? I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, again, it doesn't matter, because I'm sure they have each other's phone number and they can talk on the phone all the time. But like, I don't know. There's just something about this picture that sets me on edge, and I'm not. I don't know. Talk to me in the comments. How do you feel about this picture and this whole meeting? I'm sure I'll get plenty of comments anyways. Thanks for watching. Thanks for sticking around to the end. Like, subscribe, support me on Patreon if you like. I also have a new Upwork, so if you want to consult on autonomous AI, safety, whatever, reach out. I'm also on LinkedIn. Have a good one. Cheers.